We're looking at frustrations this morning, and we're in the series on Ecclesiastes, Wisdom for Living, and we are in chapter 4, verses 1 and following. And this is Solomon's words about frustration. Some are rather global, and some are everyday kinds of frustrations. And so he writes this, "And I looked and saw the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of the oppressors, and they have no comforter. And I declared that the dead who had already died are happier than the living who are still alive. But better than both is the one who has never been born, who has not seen the evil that is done under the sun. And I saw all the toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable business. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for the labor. If either one of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity the one who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. Better a poor but wise youth than an old but foolish king who no longer knows to heed a warning. The youth may have come from prison to the kingship, or may have been born in poverty within his kingdom. I saw that all who lived and walked under the sun followed the youth, the king's successor. There was no end to all the people who were before him, but those who came later were not pleased with the successor. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." Chasing after the wind. Well, we're looking at frustrations as we continue this series on wisdom. First, I want to get started with something a little humorous. I heard about when God was creating all the animals, and so God created the donkey, and God told the donkey, "Listen, you're going to work tirelessly from sun up to sundown. You're going to carry heavy bags on your back, and you're not going to have intelligence, and you will live 50 years. You will be a donkey." And the donkey said, "Oh, very well, but I don't want to live 50 years. How about just 20 years?" And God said, "Very well." And then God created the dog. And God told him, "You'll be man's best friend. You'll live in his house and do whatever he likes and eat whatever he gives you, and you will live 25 years. And the dog said, "Well, very well, but 25 years is too much. How about only 10? And so God gave him 10 years. And then God created the monkey. And God told the monkey, "Listen, you're going to jump from branch to branch. You're going to do amusing things that will amuse everyone. You're going to live 20 years. And the monkey said, "Well, very well, but 20 years is too much. How about just 10 years? And God said, "Okay." And so finally God created man. And God created man and said, "Listen, you're the only rational being. You're going to have intelligence, and you're going to rule the animals, and you're going to dominate the earth and control all the other animals and the entire world, and you're going to live 20 years. And man said, "Well, very well, but 20 years is enough. How about, can I have the 30 years that the donkey gave up? And what about the 15 years that the dog didn't want? And what about the 10 years that the monkey didn't want?" And God said, "Okay, very well." And so that's the way it's been. Man works 20 years as a rational human being, and then he works 30 years like a donkey, carrying the load of work on his back. And then when the children leave home, he lives 15 years like a dog, just going where people let him, eating whatever people give him. And then finally, in retirement, he lives 10 years like a monkey, going from house to house and child to child, just trying to amuse the grandkids. Fair enough. So some of the frustrations of life. I know that went away just for that point, but it's good. You know, it's reminds you of some of the ironies of life and some of the frustrations. Solomon wants us to know that life is full of frustrations. Anyone here have any frustrations in life? Some of them are small and they are seemingly insignificant. Some of them are sort of global, but we all have frustrations. It seems to be a fact of life, and that's what he's highlighting today. In fact, Woody Allen said, "Life is full of misery, loneliness, and suffering, and it's all over much too soon." I want to take a moment and just recap before we dive into frustrations and this morning's reading. And if you haven't been with us, or even if you have, and just recap where we've been in Ecclesiastes. So Ecclesiastes is a Solomon's search for meaning and happiness and satisfaction in life. And aren't we all in a search for meaning and happiness in life? And he begins with the questions, not the answers. And I think that's how most of us go through most of life, with the questions. And he presents the questions in raw, unedited form. It's so blatant, it just sort of takes you back sometimes. And he wants us to go on this journey with him. And so the question for us is, how satisfied are we with our life? How satisfied are we with our spouse and our job and our church, our pastor, our faith and our life? And so what can we do about that? And so the first week we looked at Solomon's search. He began with this great search, and he looked in academics and intellectualism. And it begs the question for us, I mean, can you find deep happiness in academic accolades? And Solomon says, learning may be great, but if you're looking for life's meaning in learning, you're not going to find it. It's just chasing after the wind. And then Solomon goes after pleasure, sort of unbridled pleasure seeking. And he does all the pleasures that life can find. And once again, he finds it just chasing after the wind. Those are momentary pleasures, not the meaning of life. And then he looks in materialism and the pleasures of building projects and vineyards and all these kinds of things. And once again, he finds it just chasing after the wind. And finally, this is what he discovers. He says, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their toil. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom and knowledge and happiness. In other words, when we align our purposes with God's purpose and plan for our life, then all of a sudden we discover the true meaning of life. And that's the thing that gives us purpose and pleasure. Then everything else lines up. And then after that, we look at the seasons of life, and we discover that God has ordained the seasons of life. And some seasons are contrasting seasons, and some seasons are difficult seasons. But there's some great lessons in the seasons of life, which is first to embrace the seasons of life and to find the reason behind that season and what God is teaching us in those seasons. And then know when to move on to the next season in life. Many of us get stuck in a season, and we need to know when it's time to move on. And then finally, to do the right thing in every season of life. And he says this, there is nothing better for people to do than to be happy and to do good. And it reminds us there's always something to do good in life at every season of life, and doing good and happiness are also often together. And then last week, because it was Rally Sunday, we jumped over to chapter 12 to look at youth because it's a kickoff for our Sunday school. And Solomon has something to say, and he's sort of wrapping up the book about how to make the most of your youth. And he says, first of all, to be happy and to enjoy life. Enjoy the season of being young. Be careful. Don't do anything that's going to get you into trouble, but enjoy the season. Be happy. And then he says, follow your heart. Try some new things. Find out what you're good at. Explore that. And then he says, banish anxiety. Many of our young people just feel like they're carrying the weight of the world around on their shoulders. He said, listen, let that go. There'll be a season for the worries of life, but right now, just banish anxiety. And then finally, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Honor, love, and serve God in your youth, and you'll never regret it. And so we come to this morning for the frustrations of life. And as I said, most of us have some frustrations in life. And most pastors, if they have the courage to preach on Ecclesiastes, I never did it when I was a younger pastor. You probably can't talk about wisdom until you're at least over 40. Some people would say 50. Some people put the marker beyond that. But a lot of pastors, they're doing a series, they jump from chapter 3, and maybe they hit 7, and then they go on to 11 and 12. Well, when I'm doing a series, I like to take the challenging ones as well. This is the challenging one, but I know you're up for it. And the truth is, I mean, how can you skip over the frustrations of life, right? Everybody's got frustrations. This book has inspired many great works of literature and philosophy and all kinds of things. In fact, Herman Melville, as you may recall, wrote one of the greatest books of fiction in the entire world, Moby Dick. It's not just about the whale, it's about life. And he said this in chapter 96, as a matter of fact, he said, Ecclesiastes is the truest book in the world. Ecclesiastes is the truest book in the world. And so it's also one of the most confusing books in the world and sometimes frustrating in and of itself, but there's some key phrases that help us unlock the meaning of the book of Ecclesiastes. And the first is, he uses the term for himself as the teacher or preacher, Koheleth. It's actually professor. So here is Solomon, the great professor of wisdom, and he doesn't want to just teach us about life. Every good professor asks questions and wants to lead you on the journey as well. And so he's asking us to go on this journey and reflect. And in fact, he says, but my wisdom stayed with me. My wisdom stayed with me. And so if you think about it, wisdom really comes from experience plus reflection. And so the challenge for all of us as we go through some of the experiences in life, including frustrations and disappointments, heartbreak and hurt, is to reflect on that, to find out what God is teaching us and what we can share with others. And so as we go through that, we gain some wisdom. And wisdom is rarely gained without some experience and some hardship in life. And so then he goes on to share some of the frustrations in life. He says, there's oppression of the powerless. Now, how many out there know there's oppression in the world today? And it's heartbreaking. And if you're not frustrated by that, then you ought to be frustrated by that. And Solomon's saying, listen, there's always been oppression of the powerless, and the people who need help the most get it the least. And this is what he says. Again, I looked and I saw the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors. You know, people mistreating other people is as old as the human race, unfortunately. Now, Solomon says that doesn't make it right, but if that doesn't frustrate you, then it ought to frustrate you. And so then he goes on to say, listen, work can bring separation rather than fulfillment. You know, the thing that we often put so much of our life into, not just for a living, but to make meaning in life and to make an impact and have a mark on our world, is often frustrating and can bring separation. This is what he says. And I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless and chasing after the wind. I mean, that's kind of disappointing, isn't it? But he goes on to say this envy causes isolation and it takes away even our joy of success. And so work can be that way if it's all about that. And then he goes on to say, listen, friendships can be fleeting. Friendship and family, some of the most important things in life, can just go away so quickly. And he says this, again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, and yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling? He asked. And why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable business. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for the labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity the one who falls down and has no one to pick them up. Friendships can be fleeting. Even family sometimes can be fleeting. And then he goes on to say, you can't please everyone all the time. In fact, it may have a glimpse into his own life. He says this, better a poor but wise youth than a foolish king. And then he goes on to say that this young king can be incredibly successful, and in his lifetime, people flock to him and love his words and love his rule. But then after his life is gone, then people don't appreciate what he's done. And that's true in our life sometimes. I mean, sometimes we work, we pour our lives into work, and then people have said sometimes retirement is like throwing a pebble into a lake, and there's ripples, and then the ripples go out, and then they're gradually gone. Sometimes our life can seem that way. He says, listen, that's a frustration of life. And then he goes on to say a couple other things. He says, words can often be empty. The thing we most want so often can be empty, and even promises can be empty. And then he says, riches do not bring satisfaction, something he's touched on before. Frustrations. Now listen, this isn't an exhaustive list of frustrations. You and I know that, right? I mean, you could probably take a moment and think, you know, what's the frustrations of this week? Might be small, might be big, might be aggravation, it might be a flat tire, it might be an illness, it might be something bigger than that. But the truth is we have frustrations in life. And this is what he sort of sums it all up with. He says this, everyone comes naked from their mother's womb. And as everyone comes, so they depart. This too is a grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. What do they gain since they toil after the wind? All their days they eat in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger. Frustration, affliction, and anger. Isn't that just depressing? Well, it should be, but that's not the end of the story. But he wants us to grapple with that and really think about that. In fact, this passage, this section of Ecclesiastes has inspired some great literature of people who thought about it, who maybe came to a different conclusion. So if you were in college, maybe even just on your own, and you may have discovered the great French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, the 20th century. He was also a great literary figure, and he's a bit of a depressing guy. But he wrote a book called Nausea, which even in and of itself is, you know, not the term you wanted. And he obviously looked at Ecclesiastes. And actually, it's better in the French. It's nausea in French. So it sounds better. But he's saying, basically, in this, as he looked at part of Ecclesiastes, he said, listen, if this life is all there is, no matter what you do in life, life is depressing. It's nausea. It's despair. And I think that's true in life. Now, Solomon points out frustrations of life, but Solomon comes to a completely different conclusion. Solomon says, listen, frustrations in life can lead you to faith and lead you to wisdom if you honor your Creator. Now, that's a completely different take on life. And it's true. Sometimes when we get frustrated in life, we're just thinking about fixing whatever it is. But the truth is sometimes God brings us to a wall to stop us so that we look up. And when we look up, we find God, and God can change everything in life. And so one of the key phrases in all this is the key phrase, under the sun. So Solomon, as he goes through these 12 chapters, he uses the term under the sun about 28 times in 12 chapters. That's interesting, isn't it? And he often says everything is meaningless under the sun. Now, there's a reason for that, because in a lot of those sections, he never, ever mentions God. And the reason for that is this. Most commentators look at it saying, as Solomon is saying is, if everything there is under the sun, in other words, in this earthly life, then everything is meaningless. But when you introduce God, then all of a sudden, everything changes. Life is transformed, and life becomes a gift, and that transforms everything so we can enjoy even the simple moments of life and even find God's presence in the pain that we face in life. And this is what he says. He says it in chapter 1 at the end of chapter 1. He says it again in chapter 5 a little different way. Verse 18, he says this. He says, this is what I have observed to be good, that it is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun. During the few days of life God has given them, for this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot, and to be happy in their toil, this is a gift from God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart. So listen, if you're just trying to find meaning in your own life or in work or possessions or academic accolades or building projects or all kinds of things, know this, they can be taken away in a moment all too soon. But if you let the frustrations of life and even the disappointments of life guide you to the one who created us, then all of life can become a gift. And so if you look in that end of chapter 1 and in chapter 5 here, it becomes the key. And if we accept life as a gift and we all of a sudden are find reconciliation and grace and love on our Creator, then instead of life being a burden, it becomes a blessing. Instead of life being meaningless, it takes on meaning. And even the simple things become a gift. So there's pleasure in work. There's pleasure even in daily food. There's pleasure in wisdom and learning and faith. There's pleasure in family and friends and in all of life. When you look at it from the perspective of eternity and you find your relationship and center in God, then it all changes. He's not alone in that. Interestingly enough, the great apostle Paul also talked about the frustrations of life as the thing that guides us to a kind of meaning that is deeper. In fact, apostle Paul said the frustrations of life are a gift. Listen to what he says, Romans chapter 8, verses 18 and following. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that is revealed to us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subject to frustration, there's that word frustration, not by its own choice, but the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into freedom and glory of the children of God. Amazing, isn't it? Paul saying, listen, frustration can be a gift if you let it be a gift. And that's what Solomon said. And it's not an easy lesson. In fact, it's a difficult lesson in life. And it is a gift because when we find the frustrations and lack of fulfillment in our life, then we find that, as Solomon wrote earlier, God has put eternity in the heart of every human being. And as Augustine said, our hearts are restless until they find the rest in thee. So with wisdom and faith, it all changes. He encourages us to honor God. Make God the first priority of your life. And when you come into the house of worship, to be silent for a moment and to listen to God and to guard your footsteps in the house of the Lord, and then to keep your word. Other people may not keep their word, but you keep your word. You have integrity in life. And then you need to value your friendship. Two are better than one. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. And said there's power in the value of family and friendships. And then he said, listen, don't be surprised, but oppression, but work for justice, because justice is something that God cares about. So there'll always be some form of oppression out there, unfortunately, but listen, don't be discouraged. It's as old as the human race. Work for what's right, and God will make it right in the end. So just thinking about it for a moment, as we wrestle with frustrations in our life and this great book that sometimes leave us frustrated, there was a great philosopher, Danish philosopher by the name of Soren Kierkegaard. And he read the book of Ecclesiastes. He wrote one of the great philosophical literary books in the Danish language, and it's called Sickness Unto Death. And in fact, sickness is one of the words in there, but he uses it to refer to Lazarus as well as this. And he says, listen, there's a sickness that is not unto death, that a person can be healed like Lazarus was, but there's a sickness unto death. It has nothing to do with death. It has to do with this life without meaning. And if we don't discover meaning in our Creator, the one who made us and has a purpose and plan for our life, then we're going to be in despair. We're going to find that life doesn't have meaning. But he says, listen, when we do discover a right relationship with God, then we have meaning, we have happiness, we have fulfillment in life. Well, I know that's a little philosophical, so let me bring it down to a more dramatic point and close with this. Viktor Frankl was a Jew who was thrown into a concentration camp in World War II, and he experienced the horrors. It must have been frustration and meaningless beyond what we could even imagine today. We can only read about it and only imagine what he went through. And it dramatically changed his life. He survived that. He became a great psychotherapist, and he wrote a great book, as well as many other great books, but one of them is Man's Search for Meaning. And he said when he was in the concentration camp, experiencing all the horrors of life, he said that people really fell into three groups, the prisoners. He said some prisoners became bad. In other words, the influence, the awful things that people did made them bad as well. And he said there was another group that just gave up, and they usually died. And he said, but there was a third group. And they thrived and they stayed good, even in the midst of all this oppression and injustice, and even were very charitable. And he said the difference, as he looked at them, is they had a meaning and purpose in life. And so he says that what transforms our life is not our surroundings, but the meaning we find. And I would suggest that's the meaning we find in Almighty God. Jesus said this. Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And so as Solomon might want to say that there's no meaning under the sun in this earthly light, for the Christian we would say, but there is meaning in the Son of God, the Jesus who came to reconcile us with our Creator and transform our life with forgiveness and love and grace. And so when we face frustrations, know that there's a deeper lesson in all this that God has for us, that we can learn faith and we can learn wisdom in a powerful way. I want to just close with this little reading, I think, that puts it in a very everyday level. And it's by Bob Benson. He says this, when life caves in, you do not need reasons, you need comfort. You do not need some answers, you need someone. And Jesus does not come to us with an explanation, he comes to us with his presence. We're always seeking the reason. We want to know why. Like Job, we finally want God to tell us what is going on. But God does not reveal his plan, he reveals himself. He comes to us in warmth when we are cold, fellowship when we are alone, strength when we are weak, peace when we are troubled, courage when we are afraid, songs when we are sad, and bread when we are hungry. He's with us on our journeys. He's there when we are at home. He's at table with us. He knows about funerals and weddings and commencements and baptisms and jails and unemployment and labor and laughter and rest and tears. He knows because he is with us, comes to us again and again. It reminds us that the name of our church is Emmanuel. Emmanuel means God with us. We think of it at Christmas time, but it's really all the time. God is present with us in our frustrations, the disappointments, the hurts of life, and God can take every moment of life that's difficult and transform it and make it a gift of life if we look to him and find our purpose. And so I challenge us to do exactly that and to allow God to deepen our life and make life itself a gift of grace. Would you join me in prayer? Lord, as we look around and we experience life, there are days when we just face frustrations. They might be small, seemingly insignificant moments, or they might be something big, a loss of a job, or even worse, the loss of a loved one. And our hearts are just weighed down in these moments. But help us to realize that you come to us in a special presence in those times. You would have us look up to your grace, to your love, to your strength. And in these moments, we can find a greater level of faith. We can find a deeper level of love. And we can find a truer wisdom to help us live our life and to share with others who are seeking some direction and strength in life. And so help us to accept these things and all of life as a gift and to live each day as a gift as we know that our hearts are right with you through Christ our Lord. And all God's people said, amen.